What a dominating performance from Brian Harman at Royal Liverpool. Not only took control of the open at the halfway mark, but put together one of the largest margins of victory, six, we've seen since World War II. More on Harm's major moment as Golf Today is coming your way right now.
Golf Today.
And with a score of 271, the winner of the gold medal and the champion golfer of the year is Brian Harman.
In my opinion, easily five of the sweetest words in all of golf. Champion golfer of the year. Fitting that 10 years after Phil Mickelson won the Claret Jug in 2013 and 60 years after lefty Bob Charles did it in 1963, Brian Harman becoming the third Southpaw to win the Open and get well acquainted with that Claret Jug, and the celebration already starting for Brian Harman and his friends. Hey there, welcome into Golf Today. This is Monday. I'm George Savarikas. Pleased to be sitting alongside Whit Watson. And Whit, you have to respect greatness with what we saw out of Brian Harman over that 72-hole performance at Royal Liverpool.
No offense to either player, but Wyndham Clark had the clubhouse lead for most surprising men's major winner this year until Brian Harman won by six shots at Royal Liverpool. Winning it, I would have believed. Winning it by six with a strokes gained of 11.57, which was by far the best in the field. It was a clinic. It was a clinic in how to manage links golf. And take your hat off to him. That was incredible.
It was the antidote to the modern game. How power has become the key aspect of almost everyone's game. And power seemingly trumps everything as the most critical part in having guys elevate their games to not only major championship caliber, but if you look at the top five or top 10 in the world, they're all some of the longest hitters in the game. Brian Harman, what he did with the putter was masterful. And I think when we retroactively look back years down the road and say, hey, what do you remember from the 2023 Open? We're going to look at it as one of the best putting performances, not just of the modern era, but arguably all time in the Open or of any major, with what Brian Harman did inside 10 feet to win by six. Let's welcome in Paige McKenzie, who is here with us on Golf Today. Paige, your breakdown of the Open and the performance from Brian Harman.
I mean, I love when it's Open week because we usually get a celebration of links-style golf, which, you know, is more about the different styles of play and how chasing the ball on the ground could be rewarded more than in the air. Well, in this case, to your point, it's maybe more on the greens than it was tee to green, although he was surgical in that way, too. To me, it was just a celebration of the variety of styles of golf that can be played and can be rewarded.
It was historic in more ways than one. Take a look at the largest margins of victory at the Open Championship since World War II. When your name is on this list, you're doing something right. Tiger Woods in 2000 winning by eight, Oosthuizen by seven, 10 years later, Palmer, Miller, Lowry, and now Brian Harman with six shot victories at the Open Championship. And the Georgia Southpaw spoke with Todd Lewis after the victory.
It looks like that Claret Jug is going to follow Brian around for a long time. I want to talk about the day, the morning specifically, as you worked your way up to the tee time. You had a five-shot cushion. People watching, looking at the leaderboard says, man, that should make you comfortable. But did it feel heavy?
Yeah, it's a burdensome lead, you could say, especially when you got such great players. I'm looking at the leaderboard, John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood, Sepp Straka, all these guys that I know are going to play good golf, Jason Day. So I knew I had to play really good golf, and it actually kind of helps. Like, well, if you're sure that the guys behind you are going to play well, then the only way to do this is to play well. And so I buckled down, and I executed a bunch of golf shots today.
I'm talking about your career. You're a great amateur, great junior player, great college player. 1-14, 1-17 on tour. Haven't won since. Did you have to battle doubt in your career over the last few years?
Yeah, I think every golfer battles doubt other than Tiger Woods and the, you know, the complete superstars.
What did you think about yourself and how did you combat it?
I've always envisioned myself doing really cool stuff in golf. I really have. And so for it to come to fruition for at least a little while, it feels like, you know, all that hard work that I've done, like, it, I feel like it meant something.
The way you won, A, in a, on a demanding golf course.
How many?
By a lot.
Seven, right?
Yeah.
Seven.
The way you won and the way you were able to battle those demons that you're talking about and the greatest on the planet, do you feel like this could be a launching point for better things to come for you?
We'll see. I did a really good job this week of not forecasting, you know, what was going to happen or what could happen. So I'm going to continue to work hard. I'm going to continue to try to get better, and I'll see where that takes me.
All right, well, let me ask you this way then. What did you learn? What education did you have this week that you feel like will get you to the golfer, the level that you want to be?
I learned that if I don't get way too out ahead of myself, that I can do some cool stuff.
You also went on a golf course where Bobby Jones, Tiger Woods, and Rory McIlroy went. How does it feel? How's it impacted you to be associated with those players here?
I've been taking a peek at some of the names on this trophy, and the fact that my name's on it is a really humbling experience.
All right, final thing. I know it's been just a short while, but what is the best thing about being an Open champion?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. For me, just the personal gratification of the hard work paying off.
Congratulations, Brian.
Thank you so much, Todd.
Some notes on Brian Harman. He is 36 years of age, third career win on the PGA Tour, and obviously his first major. He is now 10th, up from 26th in the official world golf ranking, obviously the highest position of his career, up to number 6 in the FedEx Cup standings, and now up to 3rd in the U.S. Ryder Cup standings. The top 6 in the standings through the BMW Championship will automatically qualify. Interesting exchange between Harman and the media after the victory when he talked about his Sunday motivation.
You had a couple of bogeys early on Saturday and again today. You showed some serious resilience. What was going through your mind, particularly today after those two early bogeys? Like, because a lot of men in your situation probably would have capitulated or might have shown further weakness throughout your round, but you held firm.
After I made the second bogey yesterday, a guy, when I was passing him, he said, "Harman, you don't have the stones for this." That helped.
That was the motivation?
Yeah, that helped a lot. I think he was a... that helped. I mean, it just helped snap me back in, like, you know, that I'm good enough to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go through my process, and the next shot's going to be good.
It's always fascinating to me when you hear a player engage with the gallery or take what the gallery says, where it could be something negative, and use that as fuel in a positive direction. Because most often, guys, they try and put the blinders on and they say, well, we're trying to avoid hearing what the gallery says, but you're human.
Right.
If someone's 5 feet from you and they're yelling, "Hey, Whit, you don't have the stones to do this," you can use it one of two directions. You can crumble, or you can say, "I'm going to show that guy." And I immediately thought 22 years ago, and our colleague David Duval, 2001 Open, similar situation. This is from a Golf Digest article after he said, Duval can remember the exact moment he knew he was going to win. He had taken the lead in the front nine and was walking from 10 green to 11 tee when he heard a fan yell, "Don't worry, Duval, there's still plenty of time to blow it." David said that refocused him and helped him go on to win the Claret Jug. So that, there was the fuel that those guys both used to have the what everyone says, "Oh, the friendly galleries who respect the game of golf over there." Of course, they're going to be rooting for Europeans over an American guy. But I thought it was neat that Brian, that was the first thing that came to mind for him, Paige.
It was interesting, and I think when you look at it and what it may have done internally is it may have moved somebody from playing on their heels to playing on their toes, from playing prevent defense to playing offense, and I think that's maybe the greatest challenge when playing with a big lead. And for as difficult as the golf course can be, as difficult as the weather conditions can be, and you heard Brian talk about how tough the competitors were that were going to be chasing him, I truly believe that the greatest competitor that he was facing on that Sunday with a big lead was himself. And it is something that he has acknowledged, and he did acknowledge early in the week that he struggles with, and then he talked about it on Sunday after the round, on how he accomplished getting the victory.
It sounds like, Brian, just listening to you, that you're playing well and you know it, and you just want to make sure you don't get ahead of yourself. Is that difficult for you to do?
It is. Yeah, I have a very active mind. It's hard for me. I've always struggled with trying to predict the future and trying to you know, forecast what's going to happen. And I've just tried to get really comfortable just not knowing.
My question is, at what point of time at your game you think you can definitely make it to win the Open trophy?
There were fleeting thoughts throughout the day, but I told myself I wasn't going to let any of that come into my brain. So anytime that it came, I just thought of something else. And I really honestly didn't think about winning until I had the ball in the green on 18.
One of the biggest takeaways I had from that quote isn't that there was an absence of thinking about it. Maybe that's what he was trying to do, is not think about it. But when he acknowledged the fact that he had fleeting thoughts coming into his mind, he immediately replaced them. And I think that's a big lesson to learn, is that if you are trying to avoid thinking about it, you can't avoid by thinking of nothingness. You have to replace it with something. And he even talked to Mike Tirico after the round about how, and gave his caddy praise about how he was able to help question him about hunting and different things to keep his mind occupied with other things. And I think that's just a big takeaway. If you are a competitive golfer, a young competitive golfer, or somebody that tries to avoid thinking of the future, a good way to do it is trying to occupy your mind with other things. And obviously, Brian Harman did just that on Sunday.
And it's very apropos that you bring up hunting, and Brian Harman was the guy that people were trying to hunt down over the weekend. Had that 5-shot lead in the Saturday, 5-shot lead in the Sunday. He had this quote from Georgia football head coach Kirby Smart. He said, "You'd rather be the hunter than the hunted." People ask that question, how does it feel to be hunted? We will not be hunted at the University of Georgia. So Brian Harman saying he had that quote in the back of his mind when he had that 5-shot lead, and to then extend it from 5 to 6 width, that's something that you see Tiger Woods do, a Jack Nicklaus, a Rory McIlroy. It is rare to see someone have that big a lead through 36 and then even extend it over the next 2 days when you have that spotlight on you and you're in the final group both days, knowing that, okay, I have to keep my A game. It's almost intrinsic human nature to say, let's just avoid bogeys instead of let's press it and see how far we can extend this lead.
And he did it by sticking to his game plan. He did it by doing what had gotten him to that point in the first place, and that was surgical precision on the fairways and on the greens, avoiding the bunkers at Royal Liverpool. They're penalty shots with sand. You can't play out of them. I think he was in 3 of them the entire week, including on the final hole on Sunday. Go back to 2006 when Tiger Woods won on this golf course at the Open. Remember, that was the year where he barely ever hit driver. He hit irons off of almost every tee that year. And look at this comparison. Fairways hit 48 for Tiger, 42 for Harman. They were both first in the field in driving accuracy. Harman required 12 fewer putts than Tiger Woods did, and the margin of victory was 6 shots. When you're getting compared to Tiger at a major championship, you're doing something right. And on the topic of putting, that's how he's going to be remembered for this Open Championship. You touched on it earlier. 45 for 45 inside of 5 feet. 14 of 15 between 5 and 10 feet. No 3 putts in 4 days. No doubles. No doubles or worse the entire week. And led the field in strokes gained putting, 11.57 strokes gained on the green against the field.
59 out of 60 inside 10 feet width is video game numbers.
It
doesn't happen.
Ridiculous. And so you have to ask yourself, did he catch lightning in a bottle? Probably. But he stuck to the game plan on Sunday, to your point. Didn't get unnerved. Didn't worry about taking his foot off the gas. Didn't worry about trying to play prevent defense. But he stuck to the process. He also didn't get too aggressive. He also didn't make bad decisions, and that is as much a credit to him as anything else.
And we've seen people with large leads either blow it or the final margin ends up being 1 or 2. And I was working Barracuda Championship broadcast last week with Johnson Wagner, who's played a lot of golf with Brian Harman, and talking with him going into Saturday, it's like, how is Brian going to handle a 5-shot lead? He's like, he will be completely unaffected by it. Like, if anyone could handle it, who's a 2-time PGA Tour winner, from a mental standpoint, he is so well equipped to be able to deal with all the external noise from the outside and just stay focused to the task at hand, which is exactly what he not only executed on, but what he talked about as far as his strategy and game plan going into that final round with.
Stuck to the plan, and he is the, as you mentioned, third lefty ever to lift the claret jug.
Pretty neat company, for sure. So Harmon wasn't the only lefty who got the job done on Sunday. Life-changing day for 21-year-old Akshay Bhatia in winning the Barracuda Championship. We're going to dive into the impact of his win. And Whit, why did Akshay get zero FedEx Cup points for the win in Truckee? We're going to break that down next. Very odd. Bhatia, a winner in a playoff over Patrick Rogers. As we see that final leaderboard, Ryan Gerard, who was in the final group, another impressive showing. He has special temporary membership, finished solo fifth, but it is Akshay Bhatia getting it done. Afterwards, he spoke with our Craig Perks on what the win means to him.
Well, Graham Dillette mentioned it's a dream to have a putt to win a golf tournament. Can you describe winning on the PGA Tour at such a young age?
It's really hard. I mean, the feelings I had today were something like no other. I mean, even when I went on the Korn Ferry Tour last year, I did not feel this amount of pressure. I did not feel this amount of antsiness. And, you know, you tell yourself stories all the time in your head, what could happen, what could not happen. And I just really tried to have fun with my caddy today, just have some random conversations about whatever it was, and it just paid off.
How do your goals change moving forward?
Well, I'm in the playoffs now, which was a huge goal for me. I mean, my goal is obviously to win, obviously to get in the top 50 for next season, and yeah, it changes a little bit of the plans. I mean, I'm just excited, and I love playing golf. I love playing on the PGA Tour, and it's just a dream come true to have it.
Hold that thought for a hot second about being in the playoffs. We'll come back to that. This tweet from the PGA Tour. How about this? Lefties making history. It's the first time two left-handed players have won on the same day on the PGA Tour. 2 years ago, Bhatia was celebrating a win on the Swing Thought Tour at Brunswick Country Club in Brunswick, Georgia. Last year, wins on the Korn Ferry Tour, as he mentioned. So this is a rocket to stardom, but one that I think a lot of people who follow the game expected from Bhatia at some point.
For sure. But he had his bumps and bruises, and it almost mirrored what Justin Rose had to deal with after, remember him finishing T4 as an amateur in 1998, immediately turns pro as a young teenager. He had a stretch of missing, I believe it was 26 consecutive cuts, so he really went to the depths. Akshay had his ups and downs, for sure, and didn't quite sink to the depths that Justin Rose did, but he took some bruises. There was a learning curve before he got to the Korn Ferry Tour. In his mind, and I'd say I agree with him, this validates his decision to forego college, which was very unpopular because we see Jordan Spieth go for a year and a half. Justin Thomas played some at Alabama. A lot of these phenoms will at least do Tiger Woods did 2 years at Stanford. In the women's game, it's much more common for someone to just skip college and go straight to the pros. Men's game, we don't see it too often. So Akshay charted his own course, and now it's paid off. He's a winner at 21 years old. He has so much potential. He has a great personality. He bombs it off the tee. He's a great putter, and he's shown that he has the clutch gene where he's unafraid of the big moment. In Puerto Rico, to get special temporary membership, birdies the last, final round 65 for that solo second. Here, birdies the 72nd hole and then closes the door in the playoff when he had to. It's been an amazing career arc to win at such a young age.
I always think when you mentioned Justin Rose, that was a great call by Mike Tirico. That was way to go, kid, holding out on the final hole. Actually, something that you brought up before the show, you heard Bhatia make reference to the fact that he's in the playoffs now.
And we thought yesterday,
thought that was the case.
He was going to be bumped up to about 50th. But here's what he actually earned, and this is super strange just for these two events with the Barbersol and Barracuda Championship, fully exempt on the PGA Tour just through next season as a non-member. He jumps all the way up to 106 in the official World Golf Rankings as a spot Century Tournament Champions of the Players PGA Championship Charles Schwab Challenge. The PGA Tour for the Barbersol and Barracuda Championship said if you're a non-member, even if you win, you get zero FedEx Cup points. So Akshay Bhatia, who was top 10 last week and a winner this week, would have had 340 FedEx Cup points coupled with the 443 and change he'd already won. So he would have been at about 780. They said in talking with the PGA Tour, trading emails, the precedent was they did this for WGCs back in the day, say when Shane Lowry won in 2015. To me, it makes absolutely no sense. If you have a strategic alliance with the DP World Tour, last year these were co-sanctioned. You had 50 DP World Tour members in the Barbasol, a bunch in the Barracuda, and you have guys coming off of the DP World Tour, the top 10 who aren't already exempt, are going to the PGA Tour. If you're in bed with these two tours and a non-member wins, why are they not getting a two-year exemption? Why are they not getting the full FedEx Cup points? To me, it's idiotic. It is just defying all logic that this is the case, that Akshay over the last 2 weeks, even with a win, gets zero FedEx Cup points for the Barbasol and Barracuda. What's your take?
I understood it better, and you had to explain this to me this morning in all candor because it's pretty deep in the woods.
But yeah.
I understood it better when the playoff cutoff was 125 players. If you're trying to protect your players and you're talking about guys that are kind of on the fringe, and that number is 125, I get it. The number now is 70. And if you're in or close to the top 70 in the FedEx Cup standings, you're playing at Barracuda. You're playing at 3M this week. It's not like, who are they protecting? In other words, those players are not going to get knocked out because a non-member finished in the top 10 or won the event. At 125, I get it. At 70, I don't.
Not only did Akshay, quote unquote, get screwed out of these FedEx Cup points, but last week with the Barbasol, instead of it being top 10, it was only top 5 got a spot in the Barracuda.
Also a change, right.
We're accustomed to top 10 every week in the PGA Tour. You pretty much play your way to next week. This week, none of the guys in the top 10. So there were 7 players who were non-PGA Tour members in the top 10, including Ryan Gerard, who has special temporary, doesn't get a spot in the 3M Open. That, to me, if you have a strategic alliance with the DP World Tour, you should be celebrating the fact that these guys played well. That's a great storyline for us, for both tours, that, hey, this guy finished top 5, and now he's teeing it up in the Twin Cities. So that's null and void. And now Akshay Bhatia goes from a guy trying to play his way into East Lake to needing 2 amazing weeks at the end of the regular season,
yep,
being at 92nd, to even just make the playoffs. It's horrendous.
The 92nd ranking does help his cause when the fall series begins, because that's how they determine the rest of the 125. So he's in good shape in that regard, but I understand your point. It would be nice to know you don't have to play out of your mind for the next 3 weeks to get into the playoffs.
I mean, this is the birth of a potential superstar,
yeah,
here, and you're getting 0 points for consecutive top 10 finishes and a win. It will never make sense to me.
I'm with you.
But, man, when you look at this final leaderboard and just see how much separation there was from everyone else, it really jumps off the screen.
6-shot gap between Harmon and the field. There's Tom Kim just lurking, lingering. John Rahm, the world number one. Jason Day, a former number one. Sepp Straka, 15th now in the FedEx Cup. McIlroy at 6 under par, 7 shots off the lead. And he's on a leaderboard he doesn't want to be in, which is most top 10 finishes without a win at major championships since 2015. So this is since his last major win, which was 2014. He's got 20 top 10s in majors over that span, and he is well aware of this stat.
I think this is 7 out of the last 8 over the last 2 years where you've been thereabouts. Does that accumulate to being a bit frustrating, but ultimately gives you the obviously platform to be a winner, hopefully, in the near future?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. You know, over the last 2 years, would I have loved to have picked one of those off that I finished up there? Absolutely. But every time I tee it up, or, you know, most times I tee it up, I'm right there. So, you know, I can't sit here and be too frustrated. My game's in a, you know, you think about my performances in the majors between like 2016 and 2019, you know, it's a lot better than that. So, you know, I'm optimistic about the future, and just got to keep plugging away.
probably the 10 years, you're going into your 10th year now without a major. Is that just what negative people like me think, or do you not think that way?
I don't think that way. I think about trying to go and win a fourth FedEx Cup here in a couple of weeks' time, go try and win a fifth race to Dubai, try and win a fifth Ryder Cup. I just keep looking forward.
I don't know, Paige, do you buy it? Listening to his voice, watching the body language from McIlroy, do you buy that he's just looking forward and not thinking about it?
Oh, I don't buy that at all. No, no, I don't. listen, that's what golfers do. We all trick ourselves and we tell ourselves nice things to get through the tough times. One of my favorite quotes, and I think this kind of goes to it, Karen Stupples, I remember saying it on the broadcast one time, she said, golf's like unrequited love. You can love it, you can want it, but if it sometimes doesn't love you back. And I think in the case of Rory McIlroy and the majors in the last several years, it's felt like more of, it's not you, it's me. He's given himself a million opportunities, but he hasn't been able to cross the finish line. He can play these golf courses, he can beat the best players in the world, he can show up at tough moments. It's just not quite getting across the finish line, which there's got to be something that's missing a little bit on the inside.
I feel like it's looking at a Rubik's Cube and trying to solve it. And we've heard all these different combinations. Mm-hmm. Rory says, I'm treating it like every other week. Then I'm treating it like the most important thing in the world. My game's in great shape. It's in terrible shape. We don't know what the right combination is going to be, from a layout to conditions to his mindset to the shape of his game to finally end the drought if and when it happens.
I think Paige is exactly right. I think it's between his ears at this point. The game, if it suffers, it doesn't suffer this much. You know, Justin Thomas may have something mechanical going on right now. I don't think that McIlroy does. I think it's between his ears.
And you'd think at a certain point that he would fluke into it, that somebody would blow a lead and he would fall into it. And that's kind of where we're at. Is that going to be how he crosses the finish line? I don't know. I don't hope. I hope not, given that we've seen him finish golf tournaments recently, that it's just going to be about getting it done on the right Sunday.
A storyline that certainly is going to follow us into 2024 with Rory McIlroy. But before we look ahead, we got to look back as we go to break at the iconic yellow leaderboard at Royal Liverpool. Well played, Brian. See you at Troon in 2024. We'll be right back.
So the season is complete for the men in terms of major championships. Jon Rahm winning the green jacket. Brooks Koepka picking off another PGA championship. Wyndham Clark at the U.S. Open in Southern California. And now Brian Harman at Royal Liverpool. So it's time now for major takeaways. And Paige McKenzie, we'll start with you. Major takeaways for 2023.
Oh, I feel like I need to exhale after these major season. It's been a fun one to watch on the men's side. But I would say one of the biggest takeaways is we had some unexpected winners. And especially the last two, in Wyndham Clark and Brian Harman, maybe not at the top of the radar going into the week. And I would even put Brooks Koepka in that category, only given the fact that we didn't really know coming into maybe January where he would be. And when you compare the world rank of these winners and of these champions compared to what has happened in recent history, and you can see three of the four, and Brooks Koepka, there's an asterisk, of course, given the fact that he's been playing on the LIV Tour, which does not give world ranking points, so that 44 may not be entirely accurate when he entered the week. But if you look at the fact that three of the four were ranked outside the top 25 in the world, that's pretty extraordinary. I did a deep dive into the most recent champions and what the average world rank is and what the tendency is. And over the last 10 years before this season, only five champions were ranked outside the top 25 in the world when they won their championship. When you consider that three of them happened this year as well, that is a stark contrast to what recent history has proven. And the reason that I dove into this is because on the women's side, it's actually almost the opposite. It's more unpredictable. The men's side seems to be chalk. If you were to bet on a champion, it was likely going to be in the top 25 in the world. The women's side, it was something like the average rank is 40th in the world. over the last few years of women's major championships. And to me, that doesn't really make sense because the depth on the women's side is not nearly as strong as the depth on the men's side, yet the top players are the ones that continually walk away with the trophy. But that's what makes this year, I think, a little bit of an exception.
And I would say for this year, and to me, like a total outlier year would be, say, 2003, when you had Ben Curtis and then Sean McKeel win the Open PGA Championship back-to-back. To me, this year was trends are your friends. John Rahm was playing at such an elite level, leading in the Masters, wins it. Brooks Koepka, runner-up at the Masters, had just won a live event. Wasn't a shocker to me that he then wins the PGA Championship. His world ranks has some volatility because his events don't count when he's playing on live. Then when you looked at Wyndham Clark, he had four top 12 finishes in his seven starts leading into the U.S. Open. Was outside the top 200 in the world last fall, had risen all the way to 32nd. So he was on this ascendant trajectory leading into the U.S. Open. It wasn't on the short list, but he was playing really well. It was ranked 32nd in the world. And Brian Harman had three straight top 12s leading into the Open and was one of four players who had consecutive top 20 finishes in the Open coming into the week. So all these guys had some semblance of form. It wasn't like we saw a guy who, say, had missed four cuts in a row and then voila, wins. But there were some unheralded players who have now had weeks that have completely redefined how they're viewed by the golf world now that they're major champions.
It's interesting that Koepka's name has now come up twice in both of these conversations because that's kind of the driving focus of my takeaway. At the Masters, three of the top five players on the leaderboard were live players. And I'm sure you get asked about it all the time, your takeaway on the live series, good for golf, bad for golf. These players didn't forget how to play. They just went to go play for somebody else. And they do have, on that series, a number of players with major championship experience and success, guys like Koepka and Mickelson and Cam Smith and Patrick Reed, players that have proven themselves on these stages. So I'm glad that the major championships didn't get involved into what was going on between the PGA Tour and LIV and instead stuck to their guns. And that really came down to Augusta National because the rest of the majors were going to do whatever the Masters did. And when Augusta National said, yes, these players, they've qualified, they are in, everybody else followed suit. I thought it was an interesting reminder that these guys didn't fall off the face of the earth. They just went to go play for somebody else.
I think it takes a certain type of player, though, for it to have no impact on their game whatsoever in the majors. Brooks Koepka clearly falls into that category where Brooks Koepka could play on the Pluto Tour in his off weeks. And then for the four majors, we're going to see the Brooks Koepka, who's a five-time major champion. But to me, it's just elevated the majors even more. They're the four tournaments that have benefited from the fracture in the golf world where we see this reunification of all the best players in the world and all these familiar faces competing for all these different historical trophies and events. So for golf fans, it's made the majors even more important because the whole family's back together for those 4 weeks.
And a lot of curiosity to see how those LIV players would perform in these major championships as we, George, now take a look at the next major championship venues.
I love the storylines for all these. Of course, Augusta, the kickoff, they're going to be the hype machine now leading into April when we get ready for that. Valhalla, all we're going to hear about, unless Rory wins the Masters, will be 10 years since Rory last won a major, and it was at Valhalla in 2014. That was played in August. This will be in May. Pinehurst, number two, always a great U.S. Open venue. And then Royal Troon in Scotland. It's going to be a good one for sure. So when Golf Today returns with the men's majors in the rearview mirror, we're taking a look at another big event coming in September, the Ryder Cup. What did yesterday's results at Royal Liverpool mean for Team USA and Europe? We're going to discuss next.
Brian Harman lifting the claret jug at Royal Liverpool on Sunday, a rainy Sunday. Harman putting on a clinic all 4 days and capturing his first major championship. And one of the many watching carefully U.S. Ryder Cup captain and good friend Zach Johnson. Could Brian Harman be playing his way to Rome? Zach Johnson speaking after the final round.
He just loves to compete. He loves to prove other people wrong. He loves to just go out there and fight. And there's no better setting to do that than the Ryder Cup. So I hope he has the opportunity to play for USA. We'll see how that unfolds. Still golf left and a lot of elevated events left. So, but that being said, he's putting himself in a great position. And you know, I've had many talks with him over the years, not just this year, about this event and these cups in general, and he wants it. So as an American and as a competitor, I acknowledge that and welcome that, and it's inspiring. So, I mean, everybody wants it. Right. So it's one thing to want it. It's another one to go out there and execute it and stay where your feet are. And that's what he's done. That's the most impressive thing I've seen this week, is that given the great start, he is just, for every small little mishap, he has responded. I mean, if you want to call it bounce back, if you want to call it, you know, making a birdie after a bogey, whatever it may be, he's done it. And I am not surprised.
Final thing. He says he's trying to avoid conversations with you about being on the Ryder Cup team because you guys are so close. He doesn't want to make you feel uncomfortable. Has he been on your radar?
He's put himself on the radar. I mean, I don't know if I actually have a radar.
Maybe prior to this. So.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you got to look at, you know, I think he came fairly close for Steve's team. He was kind of in the discussion last year for Davis's Presidents Cup team too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's his own doing. He puts himself on that radar. But yeah, I mean, I want the kid to play in every cup from this point forward, just because he's a good friend and I know what he can do. He's a really, really good driver of the golf ball. He is a really good iron player, and he is a phenomenal putter. And if he starts hitting, making putts, it's pretty lethal. That's what we're seeing this week.
Let's take a look at the current standings for the U.S. team. Brian Harman moving all the way up to third. The top six in the final standings earning automatic spots. That comes after the BMW. Interesting here, Brooks Koepka right now qualifying on points. What happens if he drops out of the top six? And again, six captain's picks for Zach Johnson.
A lot of captain's picks. Different arrow.
There's a reason for that, and we'll just let that fly. Ryder Cup standings for the Europeans. They have a slightly different system, European points and world points. To your point earlier, George, tell me how this team is supposed to be such a severe underdog to the United States squad. Sepp Straka, by the way, tying for second at the Open, so he's putting himself in very good position. Fleetwood, Hatton, Hovland. These are some...
Not pictured. Shane Lowry.
Right.
I mean, the Højgaard twins, like they've been talking about. It's going to be... By the time they have their team finalized, you're going to look at it and say, wow, that's a pretty stout European team they've put together, because the assumption was, and rightly so, with you look at the world rank from 1 to 20, boom, that's basically all your American team. You're going to have 12 guys probably inside the top 20 or 25 in the world.
Right. What do you think is going to happen? Let's just assume for the sake of argument that Koepka drops out of the six automatic spots. It puts Zach Johnson in a very difficult position, obviously. But maybe it doesn't now with the recent news. What do you think happens with Koepka? Because he can't qualify him. He's done earning points. That was his last chance, was the PGA Open Championship.
So you're asking me to read the Zach Johnson tea leaves.
I'm asking you to steal from his playbook, yes.
From the hints that he's been dropping, I think Zach wants the 12 strongest players for Team USA to win the Ryder Cup, regardless of what tour they're playing on. So if Koepka is at 7 or 8 and seems to have some semblance of form and doesn't have, say, a nagging injury or something where he'd either have to take himself out or he's banged up and there's some serious doubt in the shape that Koepka will be in, I personally would be very surprised, and given what Brooks has done previously in the Ryder Cup, that he wouldn't be a part of that team in Rome. And with how conciliatory Brooks has been with his public messaging and how he's handled himself in majors, he hasn't been a guy to denigrate the PGA Tour and guys on the tour on his way out. I think there's still some fairly warm feelings with guys who will qualify for it with Brooks Koepka, even though they play on two different tours for most of the year. What do you think?
I don't see how he's not on the team. unless, to your point, unless he gets hurt, unless something catastrophic and unpredictable happens, I don't see any way that he's not on the U.S. team.
Who's the favorite going to be in Rome?
Well, I think a lot happens between now and then. I mean, Zach Johnson had a good point, which was there are a lot of elevated events. Not a lot, but there are elevated events between now and the cutoff where somebody could make a big jump. And we just saw Brian Harman do it. There could be another Brian Harman lingering out there for the U.S. side or for the European side. So, to me, no one's a favorite yet. Paige, I'd like to get your opinion on this. If it ended today, if qualification ends today, who's the favorite at this Ryder Cup?
I think it's difficult to handicap. I would still lean towards the United States being the favorite, of course, on paper, as we always do. But as we know, going to Europe to play provides a different challenge. I think the bigger question mark is kind of at that bottom of the list. What is Zach going to do as it relates to picks? And I think when you look right now with Sam Burns sitting on the outside looking in, he's winner of the match play. This is a player that you know can compete in match play, but trending maybe in the wrong direction. I think you're going to have to start looking at matchups. In those six automatic picks, who are they going to match up best with? Who's going to provide the best teammate situation in those formats? I know they have so much data to lean on, but that's what I'm most curious about is kind of at the bottom of the list. And some of those players that, like a Justin Thomas, that we've expected to be on Ryder Cups and President's Cups over the last several years, that may be on the outside looking in and seeking a pick.
Paige, I know you're very familiar with the markets out there. I would say the best bet we've seen in golf, Europe on home soil, dating back to 93. Yeah. It's paid out in 97, 02, 6, 10, 14, 18. I mean, the drought stretches on and on. On paper, the Americans are always paper tigers based on the world rank. But when you have a team that's even somewhere near talent-wise and you're playing at home, they just somehow find that magic each and every time where they get the fact that the drought is going to be 30 years when we start in Rome is mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling. It's hard to believe, but, you know, those streaks do end sometimes.
I'm a Cubs fan. So I know.
It did.
I've lived it.
It did for you.
All right. So with Ryder Cup, like we mentioned, we're just months away from the showdown in Rome. We are counting down until we see it late in September. More golf today after the break.
A little biographical background on your champion golfer of the year, Brian Harman, the 2003 U.S. Junior Amateur Champion, twice a member of the Walker Cup team for the U.S. side. His two previous tour wins, the John Deere Classic in 2014 and the Wells Fargo in 2017, now the Open Champion at Royal Liverpool. Happy to welcome in Peter Jacobson. Let's start, Jake, with the Open. And Brian Harman, the lefty, winning at Liverpool. What were your overall impressions of the job that he did, how he managed himself and the golf course over those 4 days?
Well, I've always been impressed with Brian. He is a fighter. He's a tough competitor. And it's interesting that he's not in the prototypical size of today's players. He's not like a Dustin or a Lucas Glover or a Brooks Koepka. He doesn't look like your athletic type guy that can play other sports. Brian is more in the shape and size of a Corey Pavin or a Chichi Rodriguez, but he's got a heart the size of New York City. And it was on display yesterday. He was getting catcalled from the crowd. He was being pushed from all sides, figuratively and emotionally, and he stood up. And every time he started off on the weekend a little bit shaky, a couple early bogeys on Saturday and Sunday, and then he turned it right around. And every time it looked like he was maybe gonna drop some shots to the field and let the chasers come up and catch him, he just put the pedal down and made some birdies. As I said, I've always been extremely impressed with Brian because he's a gritty competitor, and he showed it yesterday.
Jake, if Brian Harman was, say, top three in driving distance this past week at the Open, we'd say it's a new era of dominance, and those would be the splashy headlines. He did it with the putter. He was automatic inside 10 feet all week. Why do you think it's the case that the short game, the finesse, the flat stick isn't held in the same regard as a guy who dismantles a golf course off the tee?
No, and that's a problem, George. The one thing that we all know as competitors at any level, whether you're playing the tours, LPGA Tour, Champions Tour, or amateur circuits, it's all about the player that can make the putts and make the great saves. Look at two players that we all know and love so well, Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. These two players have length off the tee, but they do not have accuracy. When you think about it, if you check their stats, they're probably two of the wildest drivers in the history of the game. Yet, their short games, they were masterful. They were magicians around the greens with wedges and putters, and that's what helped them win the incredible events that they've won. So making putts, saving shots when you miss the greens, especially in big moments, that's what's going to win you championships. It was true way back then, and it's true now. But you're right. Everybody loves the Bryson DeChambeau. Remember when he won the U.S. Open at Wingfoot? He was driving it so far and hacking it out of the, if you missed the fairway, hacking it out of the thick stuff, putting it up on the green, and everybody thought, oh, length's the way to go. But I still believe that it boils down to short game and who makes the putts. Look at what everybody's saying about Rory right now. He gets himself into position, but he can't make the big putts. And that certainly was true with Brian Harman. He made the clutch putts, even the one on 18. He didn't need to make the one on 18. He was going to win by 4, 5, or 6, whatever the number was, but he made it anyway. It was just kind of like la-ti-da, ho-hum, I'm going to make another one. So, the flat stick always is the defining club in your bag.
You kind of led me to my next question, Jake, and that is Rory McIlroy. He ties for sixth, but the narrative coming out of the Open was the winless streak continues in major championships for Rory McIlroy. Do you think that it's a positive, or are we still worried about Rory in terms of his overall game and his legacy in major championships?
With speaking as a competitor myself, I think it's a positive. You always want to put yourself in position to have a chance to win. And that's what Rory's doing. He hasn't closed the deal of late in majors. I know he's had quite a major championship drought, but he's there. And that's better than shooting 80s and missing the cuts, kind of like what Justin Thomas is doing right now. I'm more concerned about Justin than I am with Rory. Justin's a great player. He's going to figure it out. It's as somebody said, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. He's probably going to figure it out very soon. But no, I have tremendous faith in Rory. He puts himself in the positions. I think it's kind of in his head right now, to be honest with you. And once he can shake loose of those concerns that he has right now about closing the door and finishing the deal, I still think Rory's got 4 or 5, maybe more majors in his game. He's so good. He's always on everybody's top 5 list, entering any major. And I think he will continue to be probably for the next 5 to 8 years.
You're saying he's going to win 4 or 5 more on his total now?
I do. I do. I believe that much in his game, George. When you break down his game from the draw, I always try to, whenever I played, I always looked at all the aspects of my game. I broke it down individually to driving, to iron play, where I missed left or right off the tee, where I missed the greens left or right, short or long, pitching, chipping, bunker play. I think if you analyze Rory's game, I think the one area that he's lacking right now is that overall consistency. We'll see him miss a few tee shots wildly every once in a while. We'll see him miss a series of greens, and then it breaks down to the putter. Can he make the important putts? But when you stack his game up across the board, it's still extremely consistent. And as I said, I think things are very positive for Rory. I don't have any concerns. It's just a matter of making those putts at the right time.
Jake, it's such an odd catch-22, though, because it could go one of two directions with Rory McIlroy. He's, what, 34 years old, same age as when Phil Mickelson won his first. Phil then went on to six more, win six majors total. But Curtis Strange, who had two majors and 17 wins, his last win was at 33, 34, and then he was done. So with Rory McIlroy, we've seen him win four. We know he has, you would think, the talent, but then it's the weight of the drought, and each year the narrative keeps getting pushed further and further and further. I would think it's just going to get increasingly more difficult for him to get from four to five, but then the jump from five to six you think would be a lot easier.
That's an excellent point, and it's so hard to judge what goes on inside a player's brain, what's inside his heart, and what's inside his gut. And you make a compelling argument. I could go the other way and say that once the dam breaks for Rory, you're going to see him on the leaderboard at these major championships and in the final groups like we've seen this year when he was right there at all the major champions. Well, not at the Masters, but the last couple of majors and the last couple of years. But I think it's in his head. I don't think there's anything wrong with his game. His putting stroke, I thought this week, looked really strong, looked very confident. I thought his chipping was good. I thought every aspect of his game is good. I just think he needs to believe a little bit more. Maybe he needs to sit in front of a mirror, look deep into his own eyes and say, I'm good enough, I'm strong enough, I'm okay. Harken back to Saturday Night Live, Stuart Smalley. But I just think for him right now, it's upstairs.
An outstanding reference, by the way. Let's finish up with the Senior Open upcoming at Royal Porthcawl. Bernhard Langer has won this event four times. He's been the runner-up three times. He's won the U.S. Senior Open this year. Should we just give him the trophy and be done with it, or is anybody else going to win this week?
Well, I always think that it's going to end. I always think, well, he can't keep going. Oh, he can't keep going. But I was on the call at the last couple of tournaments that he's won, and it's incredible to me. We were up at Century World in Wisconsin when he broke Hale's record, and he's not the longest off the tee, but he's certainly one of the most accurate. He was hitting hybrid clubs inside players 8, 9, 7, 6 irons all week long. So I think the perseverance and the commitment from Bernhard Langer is probably the strongest club in his bag. In fact, maybe he needs to trade a little bit of that with Rory right now. I think if Rory had a little bit of Langer's confidence right now, I think we wouldn't be talking about Rory as we just did.
We were talking about how Brian Harman's performance was dominating. Bernhard Langer had arguably the most dominating performance we've ever seen in the Senior Open back in 2014 at Royal Porthcawl, winning by 13. And then the next time we had it there in 2017, he won by 3. So I think I'm going to side with Witt. We're borderline just going to hand Bernhard Langer the trophy this week. Jake, always great catching up with you.
Good to talk to you. I'll take the field. You take Langer, and we're going to bet for a shiny new dime.
Love
You're
it.
On.